Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. China's President Xi Jinping arrived in Zimbabwe Tuesday to start his four-day Africa tour. It's a visit that analysts say is aimed at deepening economic and security cooperation. As we hear here, his welcoming ceremony, Xi got a 21-gun salute as he arrived at the Harare International Airport. He spends a day with his Zimbabwean counterpart, Robert Mugabe, at the president's farm outside the capital. The government minister and former Zimbabwe ambassador to China, Christopher Mutsvangangwa, says the two leaders are expected to sign several large deals. State media reports the deals will include infrastructure and transport, among other areas. In Burkina Faso, former Prime Minister Roch Marc Christian Kabore won Sunday's presidential elections in the first round with a clear majority of the vote. He becomes the first new president of the country in almost three decades. As we hear here, the provisional results of the presidential elections in Burkina were announced just a few minutes before midnight Monday. He says candidate Roch Marc Christian Kabore gathers 53.49% of the vote. You can read more details on that story at voanews.com. Anti-corruption group Transparency International estimates that 75 million Africans paid a bribe in the past year. It's in a report that says most Africans believe corruption is getting worse. Researchers surveyed more than 43,000 people in sub-Saharan Africa about their experiences and perceptions regarding corruption. This is VOA News. The White House announced at a Paris summit Tuesday commitments from 73 U.S. companies that are joining a pledge to support action on climate change. The goals include reducing emissions by as much as 50%, reducing water usage by 80%, and buying 100% renewable energy. At a press conference, U.S. President Barack Obama said climate change must be addressed by all nations.
If we let the world keep warming as fast as it is, and sea levels rising as fast as they are, and weather patterns keep shifting in more unexpected ways, then before long we are going to have to devote more and more and more of our economic and military resources not to growing opportunity for our people, but to adapting to the various consequences of a changing planet.
You can read more on the climate change summit and President Obama's comments at voanews.com. The World Health Organization is marking World AIDS Day on Tuesday by emphasizing the need to expand antiretroviral therapy to all of those living with HIV. The UN Health Agency says about 16 million of the 37 million people living with HIV, that's the virus that causes AIDS, are currently taking the combination of drugs, and that universal use is the way to end the AIDS epidemic within a generation. Meanwhile, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, is warning that Asia-Pacific nations are facing a sharp rise in the incidence of HIV among adolescents. Ron Corbin reports.
The UN Children's Fund UNICEF report, backed by 2 years of research, says increasing HIV infections among adolescents has triggered alarms of a new epidemic. Wing Sai Cheng, a regional UNICEF advisor on HIV and AIDS, says the cause for concern lies with the dramatic 120% increase in deaths among adolescents since 2000. The report says while the vast majority of people under the age of 20 are at low risk for HIV, the prevalence is extremely high, double digits, among key adolescent populations in Hanoi, Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Mumbai, and cities in China. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
Indonesian investigators said Tuesday a faulty system on an Air Asia flight led pilots to take actions that caused them to lose control of the jet that crashed into the Java Sea last December. In its final report, the National Transportation Safety Committee said the Airbus flight control system had a cracked joint that set off alarms. In a prior report, they noted that the plane ascended steeply and stalled before hurtling into the water. All 162 people died.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wahid. And coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
All of this will be hard. Getting 200 nations to agree on anything is hard. And I'm sure there will be moments over the next 2 weeks where progress seems stymied and everyone rushes to write that we are doomed. But I'm convinced that we're going to get big things done here.
That's President Obama speaking today on his expectations for the Paris Climate Summit. Details coming up.
Also in the news in Burkina Faso, former Prime Minister Roch Marc-Christian Kabore won Sunday's presidential elections on the first round with a clear majority of the vote. And China's President Xi Jinping arrived in Zimbabwe today to start his four-day Africa tour.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Cameroon and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, this is day two of the Paris Climate Summit, and the Obama administration has announced the commitment of more than 70 U.S. companies to support efforts on climate change. The plans call for reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 50%, reducing water usage by 80%, and buying renewable clean energy. President Obama is expected to return to Washington later today, but he held a news conference in Paris this morning. He said a lot has been accomplished at the summit already, and he expects much more to get done over the next 2 weeks. Mr. Obama met with reporters after visiting one of the sites of last month's terrorist attacks in Paris.
I know some have asked why the world would dedicate some of our focus right now to combating climate change, even as we work to protect our people and go after terrorist networks. The reason is because this one trend, climate change, affects all trends. If we let the world keep warming as fast as it is, and sea levels rising as fast as they are, and weather patterns keep shifting in more unexpected ways, then before long we are going to have to devote more and more and more of our economic and military resources not to growing opportunity for our people, but to adapting to the various consequences of a changing planet. This is an economic and security imperative that we have to tackle now. And great nations can handle a lot at once.
Mr. Obama said addressing climate includes helping developing nations adapt.
We seek an agreement that makes sure developing nations have the resources they need to skip the dirty phase of development if they're willing to do their part. And that makes sure the nations most vulnerable to climate change have resources to adapt to the impacts we can no longer avoid. We seek an agreement that gives businesses and investors the certainty that the global economy is on a firm path towards a low-carbon future, because that will spur the kind of investment that will be vital to combine reduced emissions with economic growth.
He said any climate change agreement must help economies grow and people thrive.
All of this will be hard. Getting 200 nations to agree on anything is hard. And I'm sure there will be moments over the next 2 weeks where progress seems stymied and everyone rushes to write that we are doomed. But I'm convinced that we're going to get big things done here.
President Obama speaking today in Paris.
France announced it will provide $2 billion to help develop renewable energy in Africa as the second day of climate talks got underway outside Paris. Lisa Bryant has more from the French capital as negotiators race to reach a climate deal by the end of next week.
Je vous annonce aujourd'hui que la France y consacrera 6 milliards d'euros entre 2016 et 2020.
About $6.4 billion over the next 4 years. That's the amount French President François Hollande has promised to help with electrification in Africa. Of that, one-third is to help the continent develop renewable energy. Hollande's announcement came during a meeting with about a dozen African leaders to discuss climate threats in their countries. He also announced about $1.5 billion for an African Union project called the Great Green Wall to help people plant trees and adapt to an encroaching Sahara Desert. The announcements come as world leaders begin heading home, leaving their negotiators to deal with the tough job of finding consensus on a climate plan. Poorer nations and cultures were in the spotlight on Tuesday. Indigenous people described how climate threats endanger their cultures. Britain's Prince Charles called for better protection of the world's forests. Much of the focus was on Africa, which is suffering the fallout of greenhouse gas emissions, but contributing little to their growth. The World Bank is calling for climate justice for the continent.
Dans mon pays, les effets du changement climatique se traduisent non seulement...
Speaking Monday, Niger's President Mahamadou Issoufou described the effects of climate change in his country. Extreme temperatures, droughts and floods, a dying Lake Chad, and the Niger River that is silting up. He said Niger and other Sahel countries are waiting for a strong response from the international community. A group of 43 countries most vulnerable to the effects of climate change are now calling for a new deal to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, rather than the 2-degree target the Paris meeting hopes to reach. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In Burkina Faso, former Prime Minister Roch-Marc Christian Kabore won Sunday's presidential elections on the first round with a clear majority of the vote. He becomes the first new president of the country in almost three decades. Emily Yob reports from Ouagadougou.
The provisional result of the presidential elections in Burkina were announced just a few minutes before midnight Monday.
Kabore Roch-Christian-Marc, 1,679,179.
Candidate Roch-Marc Christian Kabore gathers 53.49% of the vote, says a speaker from the Electoral Commission on a big screen set up just outside the headquarters of Kabore's party in Ouagadougou. A couple thousand people were gathered to watch and hear the announcement. Voter Albert Zambré says people are very happy. We are proud today in Burkina Faso, he says. We will be able to breathe. Kabore will fix the country. Another voter chimes in. She says he's the first president to be democratically elected. Another woman says Kabore wants to help women, youth. He wants a change. That is why we support him, she says. The 50-year-old banker is Burkina Faso's first new president in almost three decades. Last year, former President Blaise Compaoré was ousted during a popular uprising after he tried to extend his 27-year rule. Kabore, a former loyal ally of Compaoré for 25 years, broke with the ruling party a few months before the president's downfall. Soon after his win was announced, Kabore stepped on the stage to deliver a short speech.
Nous devons conjuguer nos efforts pour placer les plaies et réussir dans la vérité et la justice.
We should work together, Kabore said, to heal the wounds and succeed in truth and justice, national reconciliation, and consolidate social cohesion between all Burkinabe. Long live Burkina, long live Burkinabe people, he proclaimed. Kabore's main challenger, longtime opposition leader Zéphirin Diabré, was a distant second with 29.65% of the vote. He paid a discreet visit to congratulate the winner just before the results were announced. The Electoral Commission says voter turnout Sunday was 60%. Observers say the poll was transparent and fair. The result of legislative elections held on the same day as the presidential poll are expected to be announced by tomorrow. Emily Yop for VOA News in Ouagadougou.
More than 1,300 migrants and refugees are being detained in a sweep of Turkish coastal towns, while many are seeking boat passage to Greek islands and a route to Europe. AP says Turkey's state news agency estimates 750 were taken into custody near a main crossing to the Greek island of Lesbos yesterday. A private news agency says another 550 were also detained in the sweep. Many were found hiding in olive groves and taken to a small overcrowded detention center for foreigners awaiting deportation.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. France announced it will provide $2 billion to help develop renewable energy in Africa as a second day of climate talks got underway outside Paris. And Burkina Faso Prime Minister Roch Marc Christian Kabore won Sunday's presidential elections on the first round with a clear majority of the vote. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
China's President Xi Jinping arrived in Zimbabwe today to start his four-day Africa tour. A visit, analysts say, is aimed at deepening economic and security cooperation. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
Chinese President Xi Jinping got a 21-gun salute as he arrived at the Harare International Airport Tuesday. He spends the day with his Zimbabwean counterpart, Robert Mugabe, at the president's farm outside the capital. Government minister and former Zimbabwe ambassador to China, Christopher Mchangwa, says the two leaders are expected to sign several large deals. State media reports the deals will include infrastructure, transport, among other areas.
China has become the second largest economy in the world. So we are hoping that the coming in of the president of China to Zimbabwe puts the spotlight on Zimbabwe as a country which can become a destination of foreign direct investment. So it's a very important visit from the point of view of injecting new dynamism into the Zimbabwe foreign direct investment market.
China is the largest foreign investor in Zimbabwe, with interests ranging from construction and energy to telecommunications. China has also become the largest importer of Zimbabwean products, mainly tobacco and minerals like diamond and gold. Western countries have restricted commerce with the Southern African nation, accusing the government of human rights violations. Zimbabwe adopted a look east policy, focusing in particular on China and Russia, after the United States and the European Union imposed sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his senior officials in 2002 amid reports of vote rigging. From Zimbabwe, President Xi Jinping heads to South Africa Wednesday, where he will meet with South African officials and then co-chair a large China-Africa summit Friday. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Today is World AIDS Day. The occasion is being marked in Harare, Zimbabwe, which is hosting ICAS, the 18th International Conference on AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Infections in Africa. About 4,000 people are attending the meeting, VOA's Jody Kapowa reports.
The HIV-AIDS epidemic is 34 years old. It's estimated 37 million people are currently living with the disease. Since 1981, many millions have died from the illness. Most of them have been in sub-Saharan Africa. But much progress has been made in recent years, both in treatment and prevention. For example, new infections have declined by 35% since 2000, and deaths have fallen by more than 40% since the peak year of 2004. That good news is due in large part to the fact that 15 million people are now receiving antiretroviral therapy. Among those attending ICASA 2015 in Harare is Anurita Baines, HIV/AIDS advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa for UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund.
The broader theme of ICASA is around science, leadership, political will. A theme for us, and particularly those of us who've been working in the HIV/AIDS movement for many years, is really to look at the progress we've made, taking stock, and also looking at where the gaps are.
She says UNICEF programs are geared toward the UNAIDS and World Health Organization goal of scaling up treatment.
Particularly in Eastern Southern Africa, we've made tremendous progress in scaling up access to treatment. So now 3 in 5 HIV-positive pregnant women are receiving treatment to prevent new infections in infants and children, and also for their own health, to keep them healthy. So that's a great news story, particularly around the first decade of life.
Bain says, however, that more needs to be done in treating kids for HIV.
We're still seeing treatment inequity among children. So those who are born HIV-positive, 70% of them are still not getting treatment. It's a major treatment gap. We're seeing progress for adults in Africa, but children are being left behind, and we need to acknowledge that and do something about it.
She blames the gap on a lack of diagnostic equipment and tools to test children.
Many of these infants are being infected during the breastfeeding period, so they're not HIV positive when they're born, and so we need to make sure we keep their mothers connected to facilities and to treatment sites and retain them in the health system so that they come back and that their children are tested.
The UNICEF advisor says stigma continues to be a problem so many years into the epidemic.
Even if a woman is HIV positive and she knows her status, she may not have disclosed to her partner, to her husband or her family and close friends. And so there's still sort of this vexing issue around stigma and making sure that there's a sense that there's not only support, but treatment services that can improve people's lives, including the lives of children.
The ICASA conference is also taking a close look at how HIV/AIDS is affecting adolescents.
AIDS is the number one cause of death among adolescents in Africa, and in the last 15 years, AIDS-related deaths have tripled among adolescents. And the majority of these deaths are happening in Africa, 85% of them. This is the age group who are being left behind. And if we don't get them services to prevent new infections and connect them to treatments, many of them are going to die.
Most of the new adolescent infections are among girls. Sexual violence and gender inequality play a big role in that. Most of the funding for scaling up treatment and prevention comes from PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Bain says about 15 years ago, it cost $10,000 to treat a person for HIV/AIDS for 12 months. Now, due to fixed-dose drug combinations and generic medications, the cost is down to about $100 per person per year. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Activists are working to end gender-based violence as part of the global campaign 16 Days of Activism that ends December 10th. In Cameroon, rights groups are using the time to advocate against traditional practices they say are harmful to women. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
The atmosphere may sound festive, but this is the beginning of a cleansing ritual for a woman who has lost her husband in Gomezap village, just south of Yaoundé.
On casse, par exemple, un mille pattes et on demande à une femme de le prendre.
Village notable Esomba Elundu says he feeds the woman millipedes and asks her to walk on her knees. He says he beats her with banana leaves and washes her with muddy water early in the morning. The 60-year-old man says this is a tradition they inherited from their forefathers and they will continue it. The point of the ritual is to prove that a woman did not kill her husband or conspire in his death. 24-year-old Anastasie Bija says She and three other women went through the ritual when they lost their husbands in a car accident 4 years ago.
On m'a rasé le crâne. J'ai été enfermée dans une case pendant une semaine.
She says their heads were forcefully shaved after they had been locked up in a small room for 1 week, during which they were fed through a little window. She says they were not allowed to bathe, and they were asked to carry out so many rites to prove they did not kill their husbands. When it was over, she says she was forced to marry her husband's kid brother. Cameroon has close to 300 ethnic groups and an abundance of traditional practices. Catholic sister Apollonia Budze in northwestern Cameroon says many practices are harsh to women and she tries to educate communities.
During funeral, when the fawn dies, that's the head of a clan dies, the women mourn sitting on the floor and wearing no clothes. Meanwhile, all the other people can wear their shoes, they can dress up normally and go about. And the worst that is really, really recurrent now is widows who have no right of inheritance. The family of the husband sends you away with the children. You cannot touch anything, you cannot inherit anything.
Women's groups in Yaoundé kicked off the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence with a march protesting these and other traditions. Among them was Odile Manga of the NGO Women's League.
Nous nous sommes réunis en association pour faire bloc contre les violences et les injustices que les femmes continuent de subir.
She says they are saying enough is enough and practices such as female genital mutilation must end. The beating of wives like hardened criminals must end. She says many parents prefer to send their male children to school and keep girls at home. She says it is only natural that she and others should come out and say no, that women have the same rights as men. Cameroon is signatory to international conventions outlawing violence and discrimination against women and girls, yet practices like female genital mutilation remain common in some parts of the country. This is the fourth year women's rights advocates in Cameroon are marking the 16 days of activism. They say change is slow due to a lack of political will and a need for education. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The leader of Central African Republic, Kouanakoua Political Party, has registered the ousted president for this month's presidential election. Bertine Bia tells the French news agency that François Bozizé requested to be a candidate. Bozizé fled the country after 20 years in office when a most Muslim rebel force took power in 2013. A two-year sectarian conflict ensued, killing thousands and displacing hundreds of thousands of civilians. An official of the National Electoral Authority has confirmed Bozizé's candidacy. The often postponed election is scheduled for December 27th. The former president's current location is unknown. The UN has levied sanctions against him that would make his campaign problematic. The UN has charged him with supporting a Christian militia accused of human rights abuses. This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on The Voice of America. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Hello?
I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. In Burkina Faso, former Prime Minister Roch Marc Christian Kabore won Sunday's presidential elections in the first round, winning a clear majority of the vote. And China's President Xi Jinping arrived in Zimbabwe today to start his four-day Africa tour. Coming up, we'll have music from Cameroon, and in our feature segment, the role of women is changing in Zanzibar. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Skuhi, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Tuesday, Sunny.
Happy Tuesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are kicking off today in the Ethiopian capital.
Kim, let's kick off in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. That's where Sudan and Rwanda scored victories Tuesday to advance to the semifinals of the CECAFA Cup, Africa's oldest annual international football tournament. Both teams needed penalty kicks to go through after scoreless draws during regulation time. Sudan eliminated neighbor South Sudan 5-3 on penalty kicks. And Rwanda ousted defending champion Kenya, also 5-3 on penalty kicks. Sudan and Rwanda will play in one semifinal on Thursday in Addis, and Ethiopia will host Uganda in the other. Our African football guru David Legg says the Cranes of Uganda advance Monday with another inspirational performance by their teenage captain.
The Ugandans had the easier passage. They beat the Malawi Flames by 2-0 at the Addis Ababa Stadium. Captain Farouk Mia, who we've mentioned recently on the Sunny Side of Sport as a name to watch, he has just turned 18 and he is captaining the national senior team. So a big high five there to Farouk Mia, doing very well indeed. He scored his third goal of the tournament to put the Cranes ahead. And Okuti scored 2 minutes into the second half, and that was basically it. As far as Uganda were concerned, they were well on top and they preserved that 2-goal lead. The second quarterfinal, Sunny, a much closer affair in which Ethiopia won a penalty shootout against the Tanzanians. John Boko gave Tanzania the lead midway through the first half, but midway through the second half, Ethiopia equalized with Panom converting a penalty. And then in the shootout, the Tanzanians unfortunately fluffed two of their kicks, so they lost out. Not the best of times, these, Sunny, for the Tanzanians. Just a couple of weeks ago, that 7-0 hiding from Algeria in a World Cup qualifier in Blida, and now they're out of the CECAFA Cup at the quarterfinal stage.
David, Etoile Sahel celebrating the CAF Confederation Cup championship by beating Orlando Pirates 2-1 on aggregate. And I remember David Legg gazing into his crystal soccer ball and saying, "My heart says Pirates, but my head says Etoile Sahel." And David, your head once again proved correct.
Yes, I mean, my heart, you know, it's highly suspect at the best of times. Always go with my head. I'm not taking too much credit for this one because really I based it on home advantage. Pirates put up a really good fight, and 1-0 indicates a close match, and that's exactly what happened. Of course, Sonny, the match overshadowed in the build-up by the killing of 12 presidential guards in the Tunisian capital, Tunis, by a suicide bomber. And this really led to all sorts of changes to the CAF Confederation Cup final. The kickoff was brought forward by 4.5 hours. Instead of being a nighttime match, it was a mid-afternoon game. And then the Tunisian Interior Ministry, they decided to to cut the crowd from a capacity 25,000 down to 10,000. Trust me, I watched the game on TV and there were very few empty spaces. So I think at 12, might have gone to the Tunisian ministry and said, listen, national pride is at stake here. We have not won a CAF title since 2008. We need our supporters. We need that ground full. And those supporters were absolutely fantastic, Sonny. They did not stop singing, and it looked like a sort of a jog, a mini jog at least, from start to finish. Tremendous energy. And Pirates were up against it, and they fell behind midway through the first half. But they were the architects of their own misery, because a cross was miscued by Happy Jele, the captain. The goalkeeper, Felipe Ovono, grasped at the ball but just couldn't hold on to it. And it was that man again, Amar Jamal. He's a centre-back, but he's always up scoring goals for Etoile Sahel. He bundled the ball over the line. And that, Sonny, was his fifth goal of the season out of 20 Etoile scored in total in the CAF Confederation Cup. And he is a centre-back. Somebody's got to tell this man, your job is to block shots, to stop goals going in, not going forward to score them. He also scored in the first leg of the final, so it's obviously, Sonny, a name you don't mention on the streets of Soweto at the moment is Amar Jamal, because he was a one-man wrecking ball who destroyed the dreams and ambitions of Orlando Pirates. Pirates also had their chances, two in particular, one in each half. And then right at the death, they were awarded a free kick just outside the box. But unfortunately, Wayne's good effort got over the wall, but Matluti, the veteran Tunisian goalkeeper, made an acrobatic parry to push the ball to safety. Over the two legs, Sonny, I felt Etoile were just a better team. I think Pirates have got some better individuals, but as a collective force, I felt the Tunisians were stronger. Another place where I felt the Tunisians had the edge was in the coaching department. And that's not really surprising, because Eric Tinkler, the Pirates coach, is in his first full season with the Soweto Buccaneers, and he's 45 years of age. Opposing him was the 65-year-old Fawzi Benzarti. Now, Fawzi Benzarti has coached every team in Tunisia many times. He's a really widely traveled, experienced man. He's also worked in Morocco. He's worked in Libya. And you could just see that he seemed to be able to pick out the weaknesses in the Pirates team better than Tinker was able to pick out the weaknesses in the Etoile lineup. But all said, Sonny, a good final, two close, gripping matches. The standard of football not always fantastic, but really close. Pirates in contention right up to the final whistle of the second leg. And overall, a much better viewing experience than the CAF Champions League final, in which TP Mazembe were streets ahead of USM Algiers.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. VOA! I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association news, the defending champion Golden State Warriors held on for their NBA record 19th consecutive win to start the season after a 106-103 win over the host Utah Jazz Monday night. Sharp-shooting guard Stephen Curry, the league's reigning most valuable player, once again sparked the Warriors with the score tied at 101 and only 51 seconds left in the game. Curry hit a three-point shot from the left wing to give the Warriors the lead. Curry then hit two free throws to seal the victory. Steph ended up with a game-high 26 points. His partner in Golden State's prolific backcourt, Klay Thompson, added 20 points for the Warriors, who have won 23 straight games dating to last season. Elsewhere around the NBA, if you tuned into Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard me report how Los Angeles Lakers star Kobe Bryant is planning to retire after this, his 20th NBA season. Kobe made the announcement in a written reflection at the Players Tribunal, a sports website. Later, during a news conference at the Staples Center Arena in Los Angeles, where the Lakers play their home games, Kobe talked about his decision.
I mean, a decision like this, you can't make that decision based on, you know, outside circumstances. I mean, it has to be an internal decision. And finally, I just had to just accept the fact that I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and I'm okay with that. And, you know, once I accepted that, then it became time to just let everybody know. I mean, why not? I mean, it's just, you know, it takes a load off my shoulders and everybody else's. And I think it's just the right thing to do. You know, once I, you know, went through the process of figuring out what I wanted to say and who was I saying it to, then it became extremely easy for me. And the, you know, once I decided I wanted to speak to the game itself, which sounds really weird, but I've never actually spoken to the game. You know, it's always been to the fans or been to teammates or, you know, things of that nature. But never actually told the game how I felt. And once I decided to write it from that perspective, then the words just came in a matter of minutes.
Since Kobe Bryant made his retirement announcement, tributes have been pouring in around the NBA from some of Kobe's opponents, as well as former players and coaches, as well as fans. Kobe won 5 NBA championships with the Lakers, and he was selected for the NBA All-Star team 17 times. In addition, Kobe was named the NBA's most valuable player in 2008, and he also won 2 Olympic gold medals with the USA men's team at the Beijing Games in 2008 and the London Games in 2012. In recent years, 37-year-old Kobe Bryant has been hobbled by injuries, and that definitely contributed to his decision. Kobe said his body knows it's time to say goodbye. I think Kobe might have also taken a look at the Lakers' record this season and thought to himself, yeah, I think it is time to say goodbye. Lakers have been lousy to start the season. They have a record of 2 wins and 14 losses. But maybe Kobe and the Lakers can win tonight because they're going up against the hapless, yes, hapless Philadelphia 76ers in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has lost all 18 games of the season so far. Worst team in the NBA. So maybe Kobe and the Lakers can pick up a win tonight. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yeheyes Wuhi and Kim Lewis.
Okay, yay, Kobe. I hope you can beat him tonight. Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, the role of women is changing in Zanzibar. And next, treatment for HIV/AIDS is more readily available in Africa now than it was a decade ago. But first, some music. Here is Julius Esoko of Cameroon with Freebies.
Nambandombi. Nama yingila nende nipponi wana. Bom bom yingengumbate. Banne pignolo b donna wana bombo na balabane nello binica quello binica lo che capova lo senti male bella lei wasa lo che capova. Nalilandana te nalaponyi nalisiba Nani wogwa nani panyae Mbamu nalilanda nalisiba Nani panyante mante nalamori nalisiba Nani dangwa Yogeka mongo Kuseni tema veitaka. Nani panya, nani landa pon na tena la mori, nani siba, nani ngwa, wei. Bate nani kata, nani pumwa, nani wana pepe na moji, nani pumwa, nani landa, nani lanya wei. Nani pumwa, nani tukwa, nani panya ndela tena la mori, wana bombo, wana bombo, wei. Bate nani pumwa, nani lanya. Nani wongwa, nani wasasane, nani panya, nani pumwa, womba, nani wasa.
Julius Soka of Cameroon with Freebies.
Well, roles are changing in Zanzibar, where men used to run for everything. The role of women is changing as well in many fields, inspired by what are called farmer field schools. Let's learn more about what's happening in Zanzibar in this report produced by IFAD, the International Fund for Agriculture.
Things have changed on Zanzibar Island off the coast of Tanzania. Not that long ago, you would never have seen a woman leading a meeting or teaching men how to farm. You wouldn't have seen a woman paying for her children's education or making decisions in the home. Although most farmers here are women, until recently none of them would have been earning their own income. In the past, we used to depend on the man for everything. Farm work, domestic needs, food for the children, clothing, everything.
The man had to do everything. The woman was not involved at all. The situation is different now. We're helping each other to get food and income to run our lives.
With 11 children to support, Hassan and Tatu used to struggle. Farming as they'd done for generations, their rice paddies produced low yields. But then Tatu had the chance to learn how to farm. Along with more than 22,000 other farmers on the island, she joined a farmer field school and was trained in better farming techniques. There are now about 1,200 farmer field schools here, which have been established by the government with support from the UN's International Fund for Agricultural Development. Each one focuses on a specific crop or livestock. Since joining the rice farmer field school, Tatu's yield has almost quadrupled, and her role in the family has changed.
Before the project, all the decisions were made by my husband. But after joining, whatever decisions we make, I am involved.
Tatu's new role in her family is not just due to her success as a farmer. Part of the farmer field school curriculum is focused on gender equality, and the farmers learn about the rights and roles of women in the family and community.
Yeah, I think it's important to promote gender
equality or women empowerment, because women are the one who are responsible with the family. Men, sometimes they have two, three wives, and sometimes they neglect one family. And some of the women are widow. So this helps women to be in front line and to upgrade their family and their children and to better their life.
In fact, the farmer field schools have specifically targeted women, and they now make up almost two-thirds of the students. 8 years ago, Zayana Ali Said was one of them. A widow with seven children, she was dependent on her extended family to survive. Before attending the school, her seven chickens produced so few eggs, she couldn't afford to feed her family. Now she has 200 chickens, and the eggs they produce are paying for her children to go to university.
As a mother, I'm very happy to see I'm helping my children in their education, because after the death of my husband, I didn't know how I would care for my family.
Now Zayana is not only caring for her family, but she's become a teacher herself. She has been trained to facilitate her own farmer field school, giving other farmers the knowledge and skills to lift themselves out of poverty. Like Zayana, Tatu has also gone beyond farming. She is now a leader in her community since being elected as the secretary of her farmer field school group.
Before, I felt shy speaking in front of people, but after attending the training and the way the trainers handled us, now, even if all of you are men, if I want to talk about something, I do it without any fear.
It is true. Women were very shy. Now a woman talks like a speaker in parliament, with the least of worries.
They may not be the speaker in parliament yet, but many of the female graduates of the farmer field schools are now leaders in district farmers' forums, have positions in local government, and are activists for gender rights. And back in their homes, these women are teaching their daughters that they are capable of achieving anything they set their mind to.
Thanks to the International Fund for Agriculture for that report on Zanzibar.
Treatment for HIV/AIDS is more readily available in Africa now than it was a decade ago. Life expectancy has increased. But as we hear from health reporter Art Chimes, a new study finds that women are benefiting more than men.
A new long-term study in South Africa has looked at the results of effective treatment for HIV/AIDS, called antiretroviral therapy, or ART, which became widely available in 2004. Jacob Bohr of the Boston University School of Public Health and his colleagues analyzed data collected in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province between 2001 and 2011. He says the scale-up of ART dramatically transformed people's lives. Death rates on the whole decreased, and people were living longer.
On the other hand, men seem to be benefiting less at the population level than women.
For example, in fewer than a dozen years, the life expectancy for women increased by more than 13 years, but men gained only 9 years of life expectancy. Why is that? Bohr says more than half the men who died of HIV/AIDS never sought treatment, even though free treatment was widely available. This suggests, he says, that better ways are needed to persuade men to get tested and treated.
Often when a man goes to a clinic, he's sitting in a room with dozens of women and is the only man there. And that can be an uncomfortable experience. And so male clinics are one idea that people have thought about.
Another approach, he says, is self-testing, where men can find out their HIV status in private. Also, Bohr points out that because a clinic doesn't charge a patient, doesn't mean that the testing is really free. There are costs, like transportation or missing work, that also may deter men from getting tested and treated for HIV/AIDS. The research paper by Jacob Bohr and his colleagues is published in the journal PLOS Medicine. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes reporting.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Remkes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Lin Shun Liao, a citizen of Canada, was sentenced November 12th in U.S. federal court to 2 years in prison for his role in a wildlife trafficking scheme in which he purchased and smuggled from the United States to China 16 libation cups carved from rhinoceros horns and worth more than $1 million. Announced Assistant Attorney General John Pruden for the Environment and Natural Resources Division of the Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney Breit Bharara of the Southern District of New York, and Director Dan Ash of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Liao pleaded guilty on June 30, 2015, to illegally smuggling rhinoceros horn objects from the United States. Each of the ceremonial cups that Liao trafficked represents one step closer to extinction for the rhinoceros, which are steadily being wiped out by poachers for the illegal rhino horn market, said Director Ash. This sentence will serve as a strong warning that we are going to find, arrest, and prosecute anyone engaged in this sort of activity and make sure they are no longer able to deprive our children and grandchildren of their wildlife inheritance, he said. Liao was arrested in February 2015 as part of Operation Crash, a nationwide crackdown on illegal trafficking in rhinoceros horns. Liao was a partner in an Asian art and antiques business located in China. Liao's role was to purchase items, including wildlife items in the United States, and arrange for their export to China. Since 1976, trade in rhinoceros horn has been regulated under CITES, a treaty signed by over 180 countries around the world to protect fish, wildlife, and plants that are or may become imperiled due to the demands of international markets. Rhinoceros are also protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, which further regulates trade and transport. This prosecution is the result of a vigorous and ongoing investigation into traffickers profiting from endangered and precious wildlife species, said Assistant Attorney General Cruden. We must ensure that the market for antiques and alleged antiques does not also contribute to the extinction of these iconic animals, which could disappear in our lifetimes if we do not act now to stop this illegal trade.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Next, on Straight Talk Africa, after nearly 2 years of fighting the Ebola pandemic, Sierra Leone announced last month that the nation was Ebola-free. Guinean officials have declared that they will also soon be free of the virus. Join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss the battle to completely end Ebola in West Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.